Why didn't they attempt to challenge David HaMelech? David HaMelech should not be listed as part of the list, should not be listed amongst the good kings. Maybe David HaMelech should be in the list of kings that do not have the chelek al olam haba, because David also committed what appears to be at face value a grave sin. He lived with an eshes ish. Uriah HaChiti, we assume, was an eshes ish. And he lived with her. And then when it was discovered, he covered it up by having Uriah HaChiti be sent to the front lines so that he should die in battle. Now, obviously, what I just said over here is not at all simple whatsoever. Whoever said she was an Ashes Ish, there's a big topic of discussion if he gave her a get before they go out to battle. In order that a woman should not be an Aguna, the husbands would give a get to their wives. Okay, let's put that aside for right now. But the Sefer Chassidim over here is saying, making a shocking statement, and he's asking if Chazal, who yored lo'imko shel davar, and they struggled to allow Shlomo HaMelech to be considered a tzaddik, despite of his sins, which are mentioned in the Nach, open sins, open violation of halacha. Or even though at the end of the day, Shlomo came out innocent and a tzaddik, why was there never a discussion concerning David HaMelech? He committed a grave avera of being nichshol with Bathsheba, who was an eshes ish, at least at face value. So he comes and gives you the answer. Ki David ba lifi tumoi kishetavla Bathsheba. The answer is, it was not premeditated. That's the answer. Even though David Enoch Hanami was nichshol, and we'll go and we'll have a whole long topic of discussion exactly what happened, it was not, David was overcome, was overwhelmed. David did not premeditate, was not premeditated. Here I am. I'm now going out on a mission to live with an Eshes Ish. That wasn't his intent. David, he went up to the roof, for whatever reason, to learn, to get some fresh air, and there, without having any advance warning, he saw this woman at a distance, and he was overcome with a desire to be with her, and that's what happened. Whatever happened, happened. Shlomo, on the other hand, he was very deliberate. It was premeditated. He read what it says in the Torah. The Torah says, you're not allowed to have more than 18 wives. And Shlomo says, aha, Hashem said I may not have more than 18 wives. You know what? I'll do it anyway. I know better. I'm not allowed to have more than a certain number of horses. You know what? I don't care. I'll do it anyway. And likewise, with regard to his wealth, the act, now without going into the details, I do not know the details, but without going into the nitty-gritty, where Yehuda HaChos is teaching us, is that the behavior of Shlomo HaMelech was premeditated. Whereas David, he was caught off guard. And now he goes back to his mashal. There are two men. One man is planning and plotting, figuring out the best way he can do an aveiron with a woman. He beautifies himself. He plans to be in a certain place at a certain time in order that he can see or she can see him. And he does things in order that he should succeed. And there's another man who has absolutely no kavano whatsoever to have anything to do with this woman. And hashkocha pratis, mazel, whatever it is, both of them end up in the same situation. And either they do the avera or they don't do the avera, whatever the situation is. The one who had no intent ever to be in this situation, even if he fails, even if he is nichshol, because he's overwhelmed with his yetzer hara, he's unable to be omid in this nisayon, he is innocent relative to the person who planned to do the avera, even if that fellow failed in doing the avera. When the very end came and he came into that situation, even at the very last moment he did not do the Avera, the fact that he planned to do the Avera and put himself in that situation makes that person a lot worse. So the Sefer Chassidim, like none other, is coming and giving that mashal. If you want to go find a really good example of this example, let us compare David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech was under attack by Chazal to remove him from our from the chashivas of being a good king, that would have meant they would have removed his sefarim. There would be no sefer Mishlei, there would be no sefer Shir Hashirim, there would be no sefer Koheles. They would definitely remove these works from circulation, because if the person is no good, we cannot tolerate that we should read his books. But the fact that at the end of the day he came out innocent, so we keep his sefer, but still he was under attack. David was never under attack. There was no trial because of this principle. Ki David ba lifi tuma. Middle of a thought. I told you, middle of a thought. You have to do the right time. Ki David ba lifi tuma. David did his aver in his innocence. Kishatavlo Basheva. He went to the roof, and at that moment in time, Basheva was coming out of the mikvah. Avol Shloimoi, Hoya Milamed Yitzroy, Lis Avois. Shlomo trained himself. He went to a personal trainer in order to learn how, I'm just joking over here, in order how to enhance his desire to do the Aveira. I'm going to be like, Chashom says, that's what he says, Shohoylo Elif Noshim, he had 1,000 wives. This does not seem correct. Short, very short, yeah.
Shlomo Melech was not reading the Torah right. He was in Lo Yarbelo Kese, Lo Yarbelo Noshim, he said, Lo.
He put the comma in the wrong place. Next. When his wife was not Tahira, he did not go to sleep. Why? Because he was afraid that he'd be overcome with the Yetzahara and he would have relations with her when she was in Nida. What's wrong? He would sit or he would sleep in an uncomfortable position in order not to... Why? If I lie on my bed in a normal way of pleasure, and he may... Okay, he's speaking over here in riddles. By sleeping in his in a normal way, he may come to be nichshol in doing an avera with his wife who was a nida. Ella ishan b'loy kar uvi inui shlo erek harvi v'hoy oimid b'layla v'yosek b'tayra. And instead, he would stay up at night. Obviously, this person over here had a very strong yetzahara, and his wife would take away that yetzahara in a permissible manner. And in a situation where his wife was a nida, he did extreme measures that he should not be nichshol. Now he's discussing over here some technique, which I'm not so sure in today's day and age it works for everyone. If a person has here who him has thoughts, yakum v'yelech b'chutz ad sheyia batel milibo, he should go out or go for a walk. Oh, yidaber shor hadvarim b'nei adam, he should go talk to someone. Oh, yinoitz gidul gudul ravu ba'aretz, he should put his toes into the earth. The yisle gufa alehen and lean upon them. V'lo yismach yedav v'lokaisel v'ze yivatel kol mine hirhurim shel chimud oy shor hirhurim. These techniques, distractions, a person should distract himself in order that he should not have a desire for noshim that he's not permitted to be with. V'im yoshev yeinu yachal lavo b'mnei shor b'nei adam yinoitz gudul ba'aretz. Okay, this we learned before. He should put his thumbs into the earth, and this is a technique which will take away the yetzahara. Does not seem that today this technique works. Look at this question. A person asked a Talmud Chacham a question that he is in a situation where he wants to be moitzi zera levatala in order to take away the Yetzirah, because if he has the Yetzirah, it may lead to doing an Avera that's much worse, of having relations with a woman that he's not allowed to be with. He says of him that is so shocking, and it's something which really we really should be reading, but we read already. Okay, you know what, I'm not even going to translate this. We're just going to go weiter. Ksiv, ki eskol maser al kim yavai v'amishpat al kol nelam zesh nizdamein lo isha b'keren zavis. Everything, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything's b'hashkocha. For example, zesh nizdamein lo isha b'keren zavis impaga boi v'loi nizchavein liroi s'oisav. A person comes in contact with an isha and he had no kavanah to see v'ro yisa yafe v'samach al shiro yisa v'cheshev v'liba me'achash shebeloi kavanasi re'yisya ein li'ovan al kocha. A person says to himself, listen, it's not my fault. I did not ask for this situation. I was walking down the street and a woman comes over to me and she engages me in conversation. And I had pleasure looking at her and speaking with her. It was a pleasurable experience. She's not my wife. She's an Esh Esish. So I'm not responsible for this. I did not seek her out. She came to me. So what do you want from me? I do not have to do teshuvah for having pleasure speaking to her, having hirhurim. I am not held accountable in the next world or in this world for this avera. That's what the average person would say. It's not my fault. I did absolutely nothing wrong. V'al zeh ne'emar. So we have over here shak and chiddush. Yavi Elokim b'mishpat al kol ne'alam. It's not so. The fact that this happened, even though you did not want it to happen, you did not plan it to happen, it's behashkacha. It's because you did want it to happen. What does that mean? I'm saying words. What do you mean, wanted it to happen? I don't know what it means. Okay, you have to use your imagination of what it means. We have a principle in halacha called sechar avera avera. The reward for an avera is another avera. If a person at some point in time in his life, he makes a decision to do an avera, I want to do an avera because I just want to, I need that pleasure. That sets in motion in this world, in a mysterious way that's beyond our understanding, situations where you will end up doing averos against your will. Okay, everything in this world is b'hashkacha. How could it be that I happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and was nichshol in this particular avera? It's not my fault. It's true, it's not your fault in that you did not decide to go do the avera, but in a supernatural way, the fact that a month ago, or 2 months ago, maybe a year ago, you were in a situation and you were able to overcome your desire to do an avera, but you said to yourself, you know something, I'm bored, no one is watching, no one is around, let me today have a day off and let me today do an avera. And you chose to do an avera. That set into motion this hashkacha pratis that 3 months later you're walking down the street and you bump into a woman that you really should not have anything to do with, and she engages you in a conversation which leads to something which is not proper. What do you want from me? It's not my fault. It's true. Technically, it's not your fault. But the Sefer Chasidim is telling us that Hashem runs this world in ways that are beyond, above and beyond the physical understanding of this world. You decided to do an Avera, Sechar Avera Avera. That's why this happened. And thus, you are responsible. Okay, that's a very hard pill to swallow. It's a very hard pill to swallow. I'm not telling you to swallow it. I'm just telling you what it says over here. And these, obviously, you have to be on a very high level of Yirah Shemayim to appreciate this and to accept it. And the common man is not going to accept what we just said. But people who have a certain higher level of sensitivity to Unyone Kedusha accept this. They accept this as a fact. And it's a very frightening principle.
That's
you have many good
it's
what?
It's interesting that this pasuk that the quoting is from Shlomo, Al Kol Ne'alam.
Well, Shlomo.
Kohelet said that's one of the reasons he was accepted, because he took responsibility for his actions at the end when he wrote this. He realized.
I read a story recently, Rav Moshe Feinstein. I don't know if the story is true. I'm just telling you what I read. Okay, this is the story, and even if the story is not true, it's an interesting concept. Again, I can't vouch for the story, even one mashu. What I read was Rav Moshe Feinstein b'soif yomav had a pacemaker. So when he was in the hospital by the doctor, they said, you know, you need a pacemaker. There's nothing to discuss. It has to be done. And we have over here, you're in a very good hospital, we have over here surgeons on call, and this is the surgeon that's going to do it for you. This is by default, this surgeon is going to come into you and examine you, and he's going to be the person who, today he's on call, he's on duty, and he's a fantastic surgeon. He's done this only 1,000 times, and we recommend that he do it because he's here right now and he's going to do it. Okay? The surgeon came in, examined him, everything was set into motion. His family found out that their father, their grandfather, whoever it was, is about to have a pacemaker. Oh, wait a minute. Who's doing the surgery? Who's doing the procedure? Rav Moshe Feinstein. We only want the best of the best of the best. And very quickly, they use their connections to find out who is the top surgeon in the world that does exactly this procedure, who hasn't done it 1,000 times, who has done it 10,000 times, 20,000 times. And very quickly they got a hold of him and they made all the arrangements, and he was there in the hospital ready to do the surgeon. And the other surgeon was dismissed. Okay, the other surgeon who was lined up to do the procedure was dismissed. They're bringing in, which is not uncommon, it's Meisim B'chol Yoyim. Meisim B'chol Yoyim. A person goes to a doctor, and the doctor makes a diagnostic of what the person's situation is, and right away the doctor says, we have over here a person that can take care of it, can do the procedure, and you'll be out of here in no time. And the fellow says, oh, wait a minute, I want someone better. I want to go check out who is this guy. I want to Google him. I want to see, maybe I can get someone better. Okay, so the family came in, and Kachava, they brought in the biggest mumcha in the world to put in the pacemaker. And guess what? Normally, 20,000 times the pacemaker, when he does the procedure, it goes off without a glitch. And when he did it on Rav Moshe, it didn't go well. There were complications. There were serious complications. I don't know the details, but there were complications. So Rav Moshe said to himself, Rav Moshe, this is what it says in the book, I don't know if it's true or not, he was reflecting, why did this happen to me? Why do I now have to suffer the complications? We have here the best surgeon. The best surgeon, he did this 20,000 times, never was there a complication. Punkt, by me, Rav Moshe Feinstein, now there's a complication. So the story says, his wife, Sima, said to him, you know why this happened to you? Because you hurt the feelings of the other surgeon. The other surgeon, he wasn't the biggest mumche, but he wasn't a fellow, he wasn't a resident. He did this 1,000 times. It's good enough. Good enough. He did this 1,000 times. He has a very good track record. You needed to go bring in the guy who did it 20,000 times and insult the surgeon who did it 1,000 times. And the whole world's going to be talking now. Rav Moshe Feinstein had a surgery. You insulted him. And because you insulted, you thought you're going to get better. This is what she said to her husband. Not what he said to her. What she said to him. What? Okay, but she was saying that you, Rav Moshe, you allowed it. I mean, he makes the final decision, okay? He makes the final decision. You allowed the family to dismiss the other surgeon who was lined up to do the procedure, who was fine and good, and you opted for someone that's supposed to be better. That was a hakpada. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is showing you that's not the correct thing to do. This is what she said to him, and he was masking to her. Yeah? Right, he didn't want to leave Maimonides. And because of that, his life was spared. Rabelsky had a maisa where he was in a very, very bad matzav, and the family desperately wanted to transfer him out of Maimonides to NYU, to a place where they specialized in what he had. And Rabelsky, he said, no, hakara satoiv. He said, it's not derech eretz. I'm under this person's care, and they're very, very good. What are they going to do ready for me there? It's not derech eretz.
Do you remember the Maaseh from Moshe?
Good. He stayed. Shortly after he made that decision, not much long after, he went into cardiac arrest. Or more. He went into a matzah. Something very, very strange, rare happened. And they immediately rushed him into a surgical unit to do a procedure. And al derech hatav, he would have died. There's no doubt about it. And the surgeon was able, first of all, according to their timing, he would have been in transport. He would have been in an ambulance on the way to NYU, and the ambulance was not equipped to deal with the situation. That's number one. Number two, even in the surgical unit, the tools that they needed are not typically there. And it was hashgacha pratis that the instrument that they needed, which is not normally to be found in this type of facility, just happened to be there. And it's written up the exact details of this story. It was a very, very unusual hashgacha pratis that the timing and the situation, and because of that, he lived another 4 years. He mamash lived another 4 years. And he always spoke about this. He always would review what happened, the hashgacha pratis. He felt it was not the right thing. And I guess you can't generalize, obviously. Okay, if you're in a hospital where they're killing you, obviously you got to get out of there, so you can't generalize. But in his particular situation, he says it's not the right thing to insult the doctor under whose care I'm under. He would have been viewed as an insult to the doctor that you're not good enough for me, I have to go somewhere else. And he was good enough, and he vetoed the encouragement of his family to go and to leave. Going back to Rav Moshe's story, his wife said this to him. I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing story. I mean, if the story is true, is that a person should not be so quick to reject. There is hashgacha in where a person puts himself. Lahavdil elif alfei havdalos. My mother was. Not involved, but she knew the people, she knew the doctor, that Bill Clinton, he was already no longer president, but he had bypass surgery. He came into the hospital, he had chest pains, they examined him, and they said, they did all the tests, and they said, you must immediately go bypass surgery, immediately. And there were doctors on staff in the hospital, wherever he was, that were very capable of doing the surgery. So my mother knew the doctor who, I don't know the details. But what did they do? The hospital immediately called up, and they were ready to do it. They had doctors ready to do it. They called up the top surgeon in the country, who happened also to work in that hospital, who was then on vacation. He happened to be on vacation, playing golf somewhere, who knows where, and they flew him in. Air Force One, they flew him in, who knows how they flew him in. They got him so fast from wherever he was, even though he was not the president anymore, but they got him in to the hospital to do the surgery, to do the bypass surgery. And this surgeon has a track record. You can read this up online. I'm not making them Google this. He does bypass surgery. There are no glitches. It goes kaseder. Clinton's bypass surgery did not go well. There were major complications in his surgery, which was totally unusual, out of the box for this particular surgeon. My high, what's the pshat? You can say whatever you want to say. It's interesting. But I'll give you one more example. We'll start watching.
Maybe in fact that this extra good surgeon was there helped him through. Otherwise, he may not have made it through.
Okay, you can look at it like that. You're saying something that's very, very true. You're making a very, very good point. You're right. How do you look at it? A person knows himself what the answer is. You can't judge. Maybe you're right. Adarabha, maybe you're right. I'll give you one. We'll start one more example. This, I always find this example. After the Iraq War, Bush W., he had this foolish idea where he's going to land on an aircraft carrier, an F-16. They're going to come, they're going to land on an aircraft carrier. F-16 can hold two passengers, the pilot, and someone will be sitting in the back. So he was going to sit in the back, and the pilot will be in the front. They're going to land on an aircraft carrier, and then they're going to come to an end. He's going to open up the hatch. The President of the United States gets out of the hatch. Victory! The war is over. We've won the war. Photo op. Click, 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 click. All the politicians are going to be on board. They're going to take pictures. There's going to be speeches. There's going to be a whole big to-do, and it's going to be an iconic picture of victory in Iraq. It turned out not to be a victory. It turned out to be a churban. Okay, so it didn't work out so good at the end. Who's going to be the pilot that's going to land the F-16 on a moving aircraft carrier in the Gulf? Who's going to be the pilot? Now, if you know how these planes work, how does it work? A plane is coming down, could be coming down 100 miles an hour, and has to land on a short little area. The way it works is the tail of the plane gets caught. You land hard, it gets caught in a cable, and the cable catches the plane, and it brings the plane to an abrupt stop. You got to be very healthy because the shock of going from 75 miles an hour to zero in 2 seconds is not for everyone. Even in great adventures, they don't have such rides. You got to be physically fit to go through that shock of coming down 100 miles an hour and the plane getting caught on the tail and coming. Now, you got to really know how to fly the plane really good, because if you miss the core, the cable, you know what happens to the plane? You know what happens to the plane if you miss the cable? You go right into the water. The plane goes right into the water. Okay, it goes right into the water. First of all, your life is in danger. If you don't get out of the plane very quickly, who knows? You can crash, you can die on the spot. And it's also about $100 million down the drain also. On the plane also. So what do they do? Because not every pilot is such a clever. They have four cables. If you miss the first cable, you get the second cable. You miss the second, you get the third. You miss the third, you get the fourth. Now, in the Navy, every pilot, every time they land, they record that you get 1, 2, 3, 4. If you only get 4, you're not a pilot anymore. Okay, they throw you out. You don't get to fly the F-16s unless they have criteria of how many cables you can miss. Okay, so when it came time in the Navy, who's going to be the pilot that's going to be zoiche to land the F-16 with the whole world watching live, with the President of the United States in the back seat? Who's going to be? It's going to be the pilot who has the best record, who always gets cable number one. Right? Isn't that poshut, ad me'oid? You can get the best pilot. So, vayihi hayoim, they set it up, everything, the cameras are rolling, and the pilot, the best pilot in the Navy, was flying the plane, who always gets number one. Guess what happened? Came down to land. He missed number one. He missed number two. He got number three. Okay, he got number three. That was a close call. Had they known, they never would have let that happen. But it goes to show, you can plan all you want. Hashem, He controls the shots. It's going back over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mazmin this fellow into a situation where he's nichshol. He has a nisayon. He comes face to face with a situation that's not pleasant. It's an embarrassment for him to be in his level, to be in the situation with this woman that he's describing over here. And what does he say? He quotes the pasuk from Koheles. And he quotes the pasuk and says, everything is behashkacha. You think I'm an oynis rachmana patre? It's not oynis rachmana patre. You know why this happened? There's a reason why it happened. It's behashkacha pratis. It happened and you're going to be judged for it. Now, today, in the 21st century, what I just said is extremely dangerous. Because you find today personally, you can say for yourself whatever you want to say. Why this happened to me. But chas v'shalom, when you see, like, it's not so uncommon when you see public figures, rabbanim, Rosh Yeshiva, or askanim, chashra people, who are in the newspaper, who are in ugly situations, and they come out innocent, 100% innocent. But it was not a pleasant situation. It was still not a pleasant situation. How did this happen? Chas v'shalom for a person to say, look at that, this Rosh Hashiva was accused of conduct that was not befitting of him. And then they pulled out all the cameras, and they pulled out all the evidence, and the Rosh Hashiva was 100% innocent, beyond the shadow of a doubt. Why did it happen? So it's very easy for me to say, oh, you know why? Because 3 months ago, when he was all alone, no one was watching him, he decided to do an Avera. So, Schar Avera, Avera. He had this Nisayon. That is a grave sin to say such a thing. What it says here in the Sefer HaSidim is what you can say to yourself. You can say to yourself, why did this happen to me? I can say to myself, because I am a Bal Avera. Schar Avera, Avera. But as an observer, when you see someone else, chas v'shalom, it is the worst thing for a person to start passing judgment why this happened. Because the truth is, we live in a time where this thing is not really even true. We can't even say, you can't say it's not true because the Chassid Chaim says it's true, but we live in the times of Hester Panim, of such great Hester Panim, you can't say such a thing about anyone. There's no rhyme, there's no reason. There are people that are accused of crimes. What? It's impossible to make any sense out. What could they possibly have done that you're going to say, Schar Avera, Avera? It's a very nice thing for a Baal Musar to say this to himself, but it's very dangerous. Because if you're going to say it for yourself, then you can say about someone else. That is categorically forbidden to the nth degree, especially in our time and day and age, where we live in day times of Hester Panim. So this is dangerous stuff. You're dealing with this like a loaded gun. This is scary stuff over here. A grenade over here. To learn this type of stuff, you have to be very, very careful. Okay, we'll stop over here, take a very short break, and we'll learn about mezuzah. I want to learn something more young about mezuzah very quickly, for a few more minutes.
Mothers with sisters.
Very interesting. Very close.
Do you eat tissues?
I was close, but I'm still very close. It is my 8th grade rabbi.
I mean, that's okay.
He straightened me out. Very, very close with him.
It's all over the park.
Thank you for the rest. I talk to him every so often.
Do you see the tissue box?
What is he doing now? But how is he?
It's kosher for Shabbos, kosher.
Yeah, you should
for
all
these
other folks.
There's
a lot of different jobs.
I don't know if he would stay in the table.
feeling was a real big stuff.
Exactly. Don't spend a little.
They have to move on.
If you can deal with all the big stuff, then you feel a little stuff. But if you're not dealing with
the Daniel Blue, terrible benefits. You know, you get a check, comes on time, and they get it relatively for what they do by salary. Wherever they go, there's nothing near that. So the trade-off of losing that security, but yet I'm very careful to watch a long list of people in those upper grades, grade 7, 8, gone. Turnover is very quick. Back 3-4 years, 5 years, it was a long time, it was probably at least 10-15 years. Turnover is very quick. I'm not in yeshiva. I don't know what's going on over there. But they all leave. They get different types of jobs. They don't get better. Money, they don't get better. That's
my
for
oldest
sure.
son's only doing the same thing.
Kind of limp.
My son says he's like 2 or 3 years old. He's going to be 45. I have a brother, Yosef Chaim.
And I have another brother, Nassim. Yosef Chaim and Nassim. Yosef Chaim was married to Shaul.
So which one would he know?
Sorry?
Which one would he know?
Maybe you have Yosef Chaim, maybe Nassim. You have two brothers, Yosef Chaim and Nassim.
I was there for my sisters, and then I'm trying to remember my leap.
Probably with the children.
Then I went to work. The point is, he's finishing now, Daf Yad in the second year.
I met your son. That was one second, my son?
No, that's the middle son. That's the one that's the guy by the way. I have a third son.
Where is he?
I don't have to say. I have to tell you the story.
Okay, Rabbi, so let's learn a little bit. A few minutes, I got carried away. Learn a little bit about mezuzah. We have another topic, but we'll learn mezuzah for now. Okay.